and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am Joel A. Erickson. I am joined, as always, by Nate Atkins. Nate, we took a week off from the podcast so that I could go to Orange Beach on spring break with my family. And nothing really changed. Not really anything. They brought back Julian Blackmon. I guess that's a change in that there's not a hole at strong safety, but weren't 2 weeks ago, weren't we just talking about how they were going to bring back Julian Blackmon?
Yeah. If I told you, hey, when you get back from vacation, they're going to sign somebody, and you could have put money on any player, you would have probably put every dollar on Julian Blackmon.
Yeah. So
this is it's fit the theme of the offseason. It's bring back every single starter that they had available, and so far don't add any starters. So it's just very, very on brand, very, very different approach from the rest of the AFC South, but that's how they want to do it. So that's where they're at.
Let's talk about some of the AFC South stuff, like what we like the most. That's so with not a ton happening with the Colts. I mean, we'll touch on it with the Colts, but let's go around the AFC South since not much has happened. We'll just throw out teams. I'm just going to throw out teams and we'll kind of try to talk through them. Well, let's start with Houston. Houston is going to be picked as everyone's champ. Maybe AFC title contender, maybe Super Bowl participant. Like I think everyone, if there's a hot team this offseason, it's Houston. Which move to you moves the needle the most with what the Texans did?
I mean, I think it has to be Danielle Hunter. I know they moved off Jonathan Grenard, who obviously is really good too. So it's not like they just are dropping Danielle Hunter into a spot where there wasn't production. But it's still different to go from a guy like Jonathan Grenard felt like he's a good player. The Vikings kind of took him as the replacement, as like a, you know, we're not going to pay as much to that position as we were. But that's the acknowledgement that, like, I thought D'Amico Ryans and his scheme really got the most out of Jonathan Grenard. Now they have a guy who's sort of scheme-proof, who's going to elevate beyond that and sort of let the scheme effects translate to the rest of the defensive line. I mean, it's D'Amico Ryans, when he had kind of the peak form of his defense, was with the 49ers with Nick Bosa on one side. On the other side, he had guys like Samson Ebukam. So, like, having multiple rushers is important to him, but having that big dog on one side is most important. And so that lets Will Anderson be that number two guy. It's going to be hard to find a 1-2 tandem better than those two. And I just think it's another position where the Texans, what they're doing that's very different than the Colts, is they're going all out on the premium positions. So they trade up for a quarterback. Colts took one spot later, but they traded up to get Will Anderson, an edge rusher. Now they're spending, you know, fully guaranteed contract of almost $50 million to Danielle Hunter. Then you add in with the top five pick on Derek Stingley at cornerback, the trade they made for Stephon Diggs, which I'm guessing is the other one you could pick as the biggest needle mover. But to me, it's Danielle Hunter, because I just have a hard time not envisioning a D'Amico Ryans defense being really good if you're going to give him Danielle Hunter on one side and Will Anderson on the other, with Derek Stingley. When you give him those kind of premium talent, I think he'll fill in the gaps at all the other positions. And I thought that was a big-time move for them. And a move that I think the Colts would agree with, because they were also after Danielle Hunter. They just did not land him like the Texans did.
Yeah, from a Colts perspective, just as an interlude right here, that might be the most interesting thing to me about the offseason, is that they wanted Danielle Hunter that badly, and they've been open about it. Since then, it feels like, you know, at the beginning of the offseason, I know on this podcast we were talking about, we thought if you weren't going to go corner, that the thing that could take this defense to the next level was a true war daddy edge rusher, speed guy who can just do it, kind of what Yannick Ngakoue was supposed to be and never turned out to be. The Colts apparently agreed with us. Now the question of whether or not there's one of those guys in the draft that could make them mess with the 15th pick, I might be surprised to think And this is just, that's just me going off of what other people have said. I haven't like looked at Jared Verse or Dallas Turner or any of those guys to know whether or not like they're like a Hunter type player. But clearly that's something the Colts feel like their defense needs, right? Like that's the indicator I get from that is they felt like that could put them over the top. That's why they were pursuing that position. And now they're running it back with the same guys. The flip side of that is there wasn't really anybody else on the market who could move the needle like that. So it's interesting to me because it's a signal that they feel like there's a need there that maybe they can't fill really this offseason.
What's kind of interesting is I think the way I interpret it is almost more of a want than a need, because if you combine that pursuit with everything else they've said about the guys they do have coming back, it feels like they like the group of Ebikam, Pay, and Odengbo on the edge, but they don't love them. And they don't love them to the level that they would love a Daniel Hunter. That was a guy that like is next level to them. But it makes it an interesting conversation for the draft, because if a guy like Dallas Turner fell, maybe he's the one, based on what I've kind of seen and read, that maybe he could be that extra gear above what they have. But I don't think they're going to really look at too many other guys, because they do like, again, emphasis on like, they like Kwity Paye and Samson Ebikam and some of what Dio can do outside, even though he's almost becoming more of an inside rusher at this point. But to them, Danielle Hunter was that extra gear, that guy that's just a step above, is not about, like, you can't scheme him away. But what they saw late in the year was teams would go max protect against them because they had racked up so many sacks. And it worked. Like they didn't have quite that high enough gear to win against max protection. And then teams could exploit their secondary even with just a couple guys out in the route. Now, you know, what we've often said on here is like our interpretation of that should be more like, hey, you should fix that secondary that can't guard three guys out in a route. But I think their look at it was, you know, if they could force teams into max protect and still beat them with a guy like Danielle Hunter, that would be money well spent. That would let them do what they seem to want to do in the secondary, which is grow it from youth up to, you know, up through some growing pains, but minimize the growing pains of the pass rush. It felt like a one-man race, which is why this is kind of how Chris Ballard operates, where he doesn't go after a lot of outside players. When he does, though, he tends to, once every few years, get really all in on one guy. And that was DeForest Buckner at one point. That was Carson Wentz at one point. And it was Danielle Hunter this offseason. And when it didn't happen, I think some other franchises will look at it and say, okay, we didn't get Danielle Hunter. Like, who's another swing that maybe doesn't cost quite as much that we can go after? That's not how – I just don't think that's how Chris Ballard operates. To him, it's, we didn't get Danielle Hunter, so okay, it's Kwity and it's Dio and it's Samson, and we'll keep going and we'll roll the cap space over to next year. And so I know that frustrates a lot of people, but to them, it's a real evaluation on just how premium of that kind of player it was. And it goes to show you, they thought that about Danielle Hunter. They did not think it the same way about L'Jarius Sneed.
So the Stephon Diggs move with the Texans, getting back to the Texans. They had a lot of passing yards last year. Mm-hmm. That's like a classic case of like, hey, we're good at something. Let's go completely over the top with it. Because Tank Dell is supposed to be back, right?
Yeah.
So Tank Dell's back. Nico Collins is back. You add Stephon Diggs to that. I assume Diggs is taking over Robert Woods' role, correct?
And yeah,
in theory, elevating it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It'll be, yeah. I imagine there, it's like four big targets there with Nico Collins and Dalton Schultz. And then
you got Schultz, yeah. I think the thing I'm most surprised by is that, like, of all the things I would have added to the Texans, I maybe wouldn't have added a receiver. Just because they were already seventh in the league in passing yards and passing yards per play, you assume Stroud is going to come even more into his own. You've got Collins, you've got Dell, you've got Schultz. You know, Diggs, in theory, I know he didn't really operate like this in Buffalo down the stretch, but like in theory, Diggs is like, he's the guy who comes in and takes all the number one targets.
And when you the targets, he demands the targets.
Right. Right. Yeah. See, that's a really good way of putting it. Like, I don't necessarily think it's a bad move. It's just sort of like a, why?
Yeah. I mean, that's why, like, I didn't love it as much as the Danielle Hunter is why I put it behind that. Even though, like, on the swing and aggressiveness levels, it's right there. To me, it comes off like they're doing it because they can. They've got those other guys. Dalton Schultz is the only one they're paying. And not only are the other guys on rookie deals, but, like, Tank Dell is on, like, a third-round contract. Nico Collins is a third-round contract. They're paying nothing to their wide receivers. And yet, at the same time, they felt like losing one of them last year put them in a tough spot. Now, it didn't against the Colts, who couldn't cover Nico Collins no matter what. But it did catch up to them against the Ravens when they just did not have enough perimeter targets out there. And so I think this just gives them one other guy that makes it so that, like, they have too many to lose this year. They have too many they just have more than they need. And it's a one-year type of operation. They redid Stephon Diggs' contract so he can.
Yeah, that was a big piece, yeah.
And part of that works. I can see why the Texans, it seemed like a weird thing for them to do. Part of it was getting him to want to go into that situation. But part of it also is they seem to be ready to pay Nico Collins, and that's going to happen in a year. So it's like we'll make Stephon Diggs the guy we pay a ton to this year, and then we'll just transfer that money over to Nico Collins a year from now. And the hope being by then, 2 years in of C.J. Stroud, when he gets to work with this receiving core, they hope he gets to that level where he all of a sudden in year three is the type of quarterback that you can start giving him less to work with, and he's still going to be that good. He's almost going to, like, elevate the guys around him the way that that's what the level of greats get to. So Mahomes, especially.
Mahomes and Rodgers.
Yeah.
To Brady to some extent.
The thing that I don't love about it, though, is to give up a second-round pick, to pay the amount of money they're doing it to, like, they better get a return on the investment in it. Diggs is just a tricky player to me. There's a reason why a player that talented has been traded two times. I mean, I have a friend on the Texans beat, and the first thing he did when they made the trade was he turned on tweet notifications for Stephon Diggs. Like, this is a guy who's going to monitor every target he gets and how that goes. And, like, it's just interesting when they already built Nico Collins into being CJ's number one guy. Is Nico Collins going to be okay with stepping way back in that pecking order? Maybe if it wins, it tends to work out for everybody, but it does seem to be ramping up this expectation up in a dramatic way with a guy in Diggs who has shown that when it doesn't work, that can not go so well. And then ultimately, what are they going to get out of it if he leaves in free agency in a year? So it's bold, but it is about the most opposite move from what the Colts like to do. So it's just interesting.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, like, it was a second round pick, right?
Yep.
This was in the middle of my vacation, so I might not have been paying close attention. It was a second round pick. Like, you could have used that second round pick on a wide receiver.
Yeah. Great class for it too.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like an insanely deep class. I don't know. I don't think it's a bad move. I understand the like, let's, you know, just load up for bear and just get as many weapons as we can. It feels almost unnecessary. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I liked the stuff that they did on the defensive line a little more, because I felt like it. Like, I do feel like, you know, depending on if Hunter versus Grenard, those guys, you know, if Hunter's healthy, I do see a uptick there. I thought they also made some other signings. Like, Danico Autry is now on that team, and Danico Autry apparently doesn't get old.
Nope.
They've added some stuff to the defensive line. I kind of like those moves, you know, bolstering their defensive line a little bit, getting some more pass rush. And The other move with them, just real quick, is Joe Mixon does not change their running game.
No, not really.
Like the one thing you can say about Joe Mixon is that he will give you a bunch of carries. Like this is what he's been for the Bengals. Like there's going to be a lot of touches. They're going to be competent touches. He's going to give you like a professional level of running back. He's not a difference maker at this point in his career. He's not that guy anymore. Hasn't been, and really hasn't been for a little while.
Yeah, he's not. He averaged 4.0 yards a carry last year, 3.9 the year before. And he's got a lot of mileage on himself. But I will say the thing that the football fit is still kind of nice with him, because by adding Stephon Diggs, clearly the Texans are just going to live in 11 personnel all the time. Yeah. And then they're going to do the Bengals thing where they make you play small personnel and then slam Joe Mixon up on occasion. And that's kind of where he can occasionally do something, you know, when he gets lined up in the open field against a tired defense. That's where he's going to be at his best. But no, it mostly just maintains what they had with Devin Singletary. That move didn't do a lot for me. Actually, the one I liked that nobody really talks about for good reason, but they took Azeez Al-Shaair from the Titans, who last year was one of the top tackling players in the NFL. Just a guy that makes a lot of plays too, 6 quarterback hits and 9 tackles for losses. Like that's getting D'Amico Ryans his type of linebacker again. And so they made a lot of nice moves on the defense. They lost Grenard and they lost Sheldon Rankins, who I think is also a guy you really like and was very good for them last year. So it's not like they just added guys and dramatically improved. But I think between Stingley and Will Anderson getting a year older, and then you just add a little bit of uptick at those three, at two to three other positions on that defense. Yeah, everything they're doing suggests they think this team can go really far. And maybe this is the level of like uber aggressiveness that you need to take in the AFC when the top targets are the Chiefs and the Bills and the Bengals if they're healthy and the Ravens. Like you could argue like this is so far from what the Colts do. And I don't like I'm one of those, I don't know that either extreme is necessarily the best way, but I could see where you could land on that being, if we really believe in this team, we really believe in where we're at right now, like why go halfway? Let's go all the way.
Yeah, I would like kind of like I think my general, and it probably come through on the podcast over the course of the time we've been doing this, but like some median of the two approaches is probably where I would land. More additions in the Colts, maybe not going like the way the Jaguars operate, where they just like sign a bunch of free agents because they are going to sign a bunch of free agents. I don't really love it. Let's go to the Jaguars next. The Jaguars, I think the reason I'm going to go with the Jaguars next is that like as much as everyone's down on the Jaguars right now, they still have Trevor Lawrence. And I would still take Trevor Lawrence over Will Levis. So, like, I think there's been some attention paid to the Titans. I don't know. Like, until I see Levis play, you know, like, something more than just a, you know, his opening game where he was so – where he hit basically every deep shot. I don't know. I have concerns about the way that team's – what that team's ceiling can be. Whereas, like – I know Trevor Lawrence hasn't performed up to what we think he's been, but he's at the very least been a playoff quarterback, you know? And so like the Jaguars, I feel like the Titans are getting, it made some moves that like caught people's attention. I still feel like I'm more worried about the Jaguars than the Titans.
Oh, no doubt about that. I mean, one thing to remember is like people rightly faded the Jaguars when they faded themselves, falling apart down the stretch. But you got to remember, they were a team that, you know, that started so well last year, and it really started crumbling down when, number one, their schedule got a lot harder, but number two, Trevor got hurt, and he was playing with that ankle injury, lost his mobility, which is a big part of his game, and then their defense obviously fell apart. So there's still a lot of questions on defense where they have a brand new staff, but like I do think people are like they're reacting too much to Trevor Lawrence and always have. Like he was the no doubt number one pick in the draft, and he had a bad rookie year. And then it was like he had that resurgent second half of the next season. And then everybody in the world thought I was all of a sudden ready to put him up there with like Joe Burrow and guys like that. And then he struggles a little bit. His team falls apart when he plays on an ankle injury, and people are just writing him off more than I think they should. So, I mean, it doesn't help that they lost Calvin Ridley. That did not go the best way for them. That's sort of the inefficiency that they operate with, where they trade a draft pick for a guy and don't find a way to keep him, even as much as he wanted to stay there. They decided to pay Josh Allen instead. That contract just came through today. Massive, massive money to Josh Allen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say they've gotten necessarily better, but I do think that they have gone after some of the positions that really hurt them last year, which was their offensive line just became a disaster. And it undid a lot of that Calvin Ridley investment. Everyone got so excited in the passing game, but they couldn't block enough people. They couldn't keep Trevor healthy. And so at least getting Mitch Morse from the Bills, who 2 years ago was a Pro Bowler, he's getting a little older, so we'll see what he's got left. But that should stabilize a little bit. And then Eric Armstead does give them, you know, a little bit more on defense, where, and we'll see, it may be like a lot of their other swings where they pay a guy in free agency and he's not what he was for another team. But their defense was just a complete disaster at the end of last season. So they had to do something about that. And getting him to play next to Josh Allen, you know, you can see where if they can get back to being that team that scores at a high clip, makes teams drop back. Having to deal with Armstead and Josh Allen in drop back situations is not what you want. So, you know, I wouldn't put them as the favorites in the division, but I think they're absolutely in the mix as much as the Colts are at this point.
So as I'm looking at their offseason additions, I could be wrong about this. I was probably wrong on Christian Kirk, at least in the first year of the deal. I don't know. I'm not convinced. I think the linemen are if the linemen pan out. If the linemen pan out, I think those are the ones that mean the most. I realize what I'm saying with Eric Armstead. Eric Armstead to me, as much as I know he meant something to the Niners, and his pressure numbers are great. I feel like Eric Armstead's reputation outstrips his production. I could be wrong. In terms of like when you turned on a Niners game over the last, basically since they got rid of Buck, basically since they traded Buckner and decided to go all in on Armstead, I don't feel like when you turn on Niners games, you're just like, oh my goodness, Eric Armstead just off the screen every time. In fact, I think there's a lot of games I've watched that not at all. Don't notice him at all. And so I think he's a good player. I don't know that he's like quite the investment level the way people acted was like, oh, they've changed their defense entirely. Maybe. I don't know. Like, this is a team that had 40 sacks last year. Does he get you to 55? Does he get you to 45? Like, what's the level there? I don't know. This could be just the wrong bias for me and not knowing enough about Armstead's game. I don't see it as much of a difference maker as maybe some other people do. If Trevon Walker continues to turn into something, and then they have like two full on like war daddy edge rushers, well, then Armstead's going to look good and everybody else is going to look good. Because
that's what I think the bet is. Because I agree. I mean, Armstead in himself is not a difference maker. I think he's drafted almost like more on his floor, where he's like good against the run. He does, you know, he can kind of fit your pass rush. But the only year that he's had more than six sacks or 13 quarterback hits was 2019, the last time he played with DeForest Buckner, who takes all the double teams on the inside. So I don't know that he's going to engineer anybody's pass rush. Their hope is that he's their third best rusher, with Trevon Walker and Josh Allen. And it takes away the place for quarterbacks to step up to in the pocket if those two are winning off the edge. That's the model. I mean, it does feel a lot like the kind of free agency that Chris Ballard criticizes a lot, at like paying A money for B talent. Jaguars do this a lot. I feel like a lot of their class was that. Gabe Davis.
Darnell, like, for instance, Darnell Savage.
Yep.
Wore out his welcome in Green Bay. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're counting on him to stabilize your secondary or whatever, you've got to find something that wasn't there last year. Gabe Davis, I think to Bills fans, is kind of a guy who it's like, man, he never really quite got to what we thought he could be. Is that right? Is that fair?
Yeah, but I will say on Gabe Davis, I think he was the victim of the treatment Stephon Diggs gets to be on your team. The targets were never there for Gabe Davis, but his efficiency numbers are ridiculous. I mean, 9.1 yards per target, 6+ touchdowns in every year. When they've needed him, he's really delivered. 12.8 yards per target in his career in the playoffs. The playoffs are usually when he kind of becomes more that dude. Their offense cooks in the playoffs, and then they always lose because their defense can't stop anybody, even if you give them 13 seconds to work with. So Gabe Davis, I think, actually can work. Like, they paid up for it. That's the thing, is they always – like, they don't get really great deals on these, but he can be close enough to what Calvin Ridley is if you give him a bigger role, at least what Calvin Ridley was last year for the Jaguars, which was productive but inconsistent. That's kind of Gabe Davis's game. Is he explodes in moments, but, you know, is he sort of your every down guy? I don't know. But it does make it so, like, they lost Calvin Ridley, but I don't know that they're taking a huge step back there. Maybe a slight step back, but it keeps their offense kind of high upside in the passing game. And that's where, like, that's where they need some of those moves on the offensive line to work out, because that's what kind of undid them last year. Is they can't run the ball, they couldn't protect their quarterback, and then, yeah, if Trevor's not healthy, none of it's going to work. So if they keep him healthy, I think he can work with Gabe Davis and Christian Kirk and Evan Ingram and Zay Jones and all those guys, and I think they can get close enough back to what they were the year before that, when they were kind of one of those more exciting offenses. I have more questions about the defense, because I don't know that Arik Armstead alone is going to, like, solve the disaster we saw at the end of last year. They got to hope the new coaching staff solves a lot of that. But, you know, they've gone after the premium positions. Another team that's doing it, unlike the Colts are. So it's like the inverse approach. Can they make up for maybe their lack of what's been a lack of, you know, run defense and interior offensive line play, all those, you know, run game, all those, like, less sexy areas? Do they have enough there to let their premium position shine?
Okay, so that's Calvin Ridley's a good transition to the Titans. Titans, I think, ended up being a big deal for most of them, most Colts fans, because they ended up with L'Jarius Sneed. This is another team that, you know, just like you just said, premium positions, cornerback, wide receiver with Ridley, big investments at those positions. I think everyone can see how maybe the money invested, the guaranteed money invested at those positions, could be a problem down the line for the Titans. I like Sneed as a player. We talked about this. I really like Sneed as a player. It did feel like he got a pretty big deal once they traded him. And this is like a hard thing to know. Like, you want a team to just be like, okay, this guy is good enough, we should pay him. But it's $55 million guaranteed, right?
I think so. And that's on top of the draft picks they gave up.
Yeah, and now there's a knee issue, and, like, I hate to bring this up, but, like, when Chris Ballard talks about, like, the risk involved with that, like, I think it mostly gets laughed off because he doesn't invest anything in outside free agents. But, like, we just saw the risk of this with the Colts having to jettison Shaq Leonard when they did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yes, you want them to sign more people, but yes, there's also a significant risk in giving a lot of guaranteed money to a player who maybe has an injury history. Ultimately though, the Titans thing to me comes down to, I just don't know what to expect from Levis.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's all set up to be an evaluation year for Will Levis. This is not a roster on paper that's going to compete with the other three in the division. I think what they did with Sneed is just, they realized, like, if Levis were to kind of take off and give them a chance, they've got to have – they had nothing at cornerback at all. They couldn't stop anybody in the back end. And so what they did is they let Denico Autry go, which is like an 11.5 set guy, and they basically transitioned that investment plus a ton more to Legarius Sneed. So, you know, they have, you know, guys like Jeffrey Simmons and Harold Landry up front, and then at least now they have Sneed on the back end. They signed Chidobe Awuzie to just have a real secondary. That's what I think it does. Sneed to me is like, I mean, we've seen his ceiling. If they can get in the playoffs, he seems to really can, bring really like the playoffs. I do think like there's a lot of the buzz for him still felt like partly the Chiefs generating a market and partly the fact that like there were not good alternatives anywhere else really in free agency. If you wanted a proven number one guy who does it in the playoffs, and that's Legarius Sneed. And so he still has not been like an all pro or a pro bowler. So he's really good. I don't know that like he makes your whole secondary. They're still going to have to find enough of a pass rush, which means keeping Harold Landry healthy, which hasn't always happened. So I just think they wanted to not have one. Another way of taking a different approach than the Colts is they're more about like, we don't want this one position to just be the reason we don't have a chance this year. And that was how they looked at their secondary. They went out and fixed it. And then, yeah, most of the other stuff they're doing is, you know, going after, I mean, they replaced Derrick Henry with Tony Pollard. That's maybe lateral, but the Calvin Ridley move was all about evaluating Will Levis. Like, if you get him in Brian Callahan's offense and you give him Calvin Ridley on one side and DeAndre Hopkins on another, and you're going to learn whether he can be a dropback passer. And yeah, that's paid a ton for him too. It's a guy that's like getting close to 30 who signed a 4-year deal. So, you know, they had to overpay because they don't have that. They don't have as much to offer as some other teams would, as far as like an established quarterback or a playoff roster. So, but they're doing the thing where like in a year, it very much is set up. They know the likelihood is they're not a great team. If Will Levis is bad, they're going to be probably a pretty bad team. And that's when they'll go for their new quarterback, but they're going to learn that this year at least.
So all this to say, I did want to just go around and kind of get our like what our thoughts were on the other AFC South teams. You know, all this to say, I think you and I both really believe in what CJ, you know, think, you know, we saw what CJ Stroud did. Like the Texans are a problem because of Stroud. The Jaguars can be a problem because of Lawrence. We still wonder about Levis. And none of this changes. None of this really changes to me my evaluation of what the Colts did. I was just on. We're taping this on Wednesday. I was on 1070 The Fan this morning, and Kevin Bowen brought this up. This is something you guys have heard on the podcast before. I still don't know that they did. I shouldn't say I still don't know. They didn't do anything to raise the floor of this for the secondary so far. They didn't. They haven't added like what we talked about in terms of going on top of what you just had. They haven't done that either. They have essentially brought back, I mean, everyone's talking about this. It's the run it back Colts. They've brought back whatever they had, which I do think that was important. I don't think that was unimportant. If you let any of those guys go, you create an enormous hole that you have to fill with somebody. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of those spots, it kind of had to be an experienced player for reasons we went into earlier. Like a lot of them were at spots where it's hard for a rookie to be impactful right away because of the complexity of those spots, the communication, a bunch of different things. In Grover Stewart's case, just the strength it takes to play at the NFL level at nose tackle. And if you go back and look at like nose tackle picks over the years, like it does take them, it typically takes them like a year or two to like really make an impact. So like bringing those guys back, totally agree with that. But there's just nothing on top of this. Like they didn't add in that, like with these other three teams that we're talking about, you and I are talking about like, you know, how much of an impact does this make? How much does it change them? But they do, some of these moves do change them. Like the Texans acquisition of Diggs is a good example. Like did they need him? Like, was he a need? No. But does he maybe elevate them in a way that maybe a draft pick wouldn't have. Yeah, I can see that. Just for the same reasons you just said, they had receiver injuries last year, and got to the point where it was just Nico Collins at the end. Like, totally get that. The Colts haven't made any of those moves this offseason, and you're putting a lot on the draft class. We're going to be transitioning to draft here on the podcast over the next couple of weeks. Chris Ballard is like, he might as well be the author of it. He might as well be the author of, you can't expect rookies to be finished products right away. He says it literally every year after they pick people. Like, hey, we really like this guy, but you can't expect him to be a superstar right away. Now, have they gotten difference makers in the draft who are impactful right away? Yes. Quentin Nelson, Shaq Leonard, Braden Smith, Jonathan Taylor. There's been a lot of guys who've been really impactful right away for this team as rookies. Josh Downs is a more recent example. Like, but there have also been a lot of picks on the other side who either needed some time to get going, didn't pan out right away. Like, there's an unknown quality with a draft pick that just doesn't, like, if they hit on a bunch of draft picks, then yes, okay, you can fill some of these needs and holes that you have. But what if you don't? What if they don't hit right away? What if they need 2 years?
Yeah, I sat there for an hour as we talked with Chris Ballard in Orlando, and a lot of the conversation was about just this general philosophy and debate about what free agency should be and shouldn't be. And I just feel like it's just too rigid from their point of view. I just think it's too narrow-minded to frame this as you either bring back Kenny Moore and Grover Stewart and Julian Blackman and on, or you replace them with all new players. And what I asked him is, I said, why can't you do both? Why can't you bring them back and then get a real cornerback? And his comment was like, well, we tried on a few, but we didn't get the ones we wanted. And I just think they had to be more open-minded to it, because I think what they miss is, yeah, elements of ceiling and floor. Is that you think about the secondary, like, yes, there's ways you can talk yourself into, if Nick Cross takes a step, if Juju Brents stays healthier, those are two players drafted on day two with a lot of athleticism who could be good players. They also just got the best versions of Julian Blackman and Kenny Moore. And what if they don't?
Right. Yeah, this is a very fair point.
What if he misses 5 games? You know, Julian Blackman, I mean, he only missed 2 games. He's missed more than that before. But, you know, I mean, what if some of those other positions start to undo what you did there? And so that's where I just feel like way too often the Colts are looking for reasons not to like free agents and not to like outside guys, and assuming there must be something more wrong with this guy than we know. And sometimes that can be fair to a point, is that there are sometimes risks you are not fully aware of with outside players. But I think just assuming that across the board about everybody is what leads you to miss on a guy like, you know, they wouldn't end up landing a Stephon Gilmore if they took that approach too far. They trust it with Stephon Gilmore. They got lucky that Rodney McLeod his market was such that he took a minimum deal, because there ended up being no baggage on Rodney McLeod. There wasn't the only reason he was in free agency is the Eagles draft for future needs, and then he got hurt. And then he bounced back and was like a Pro Bowl caliber player for them. And like, I wish they would learn from some of those hits where they realize, like, we can take some reasonable, smaller level risks, like $5 million type risks on 1 year contracts, which to me is almost no risk, but at least it gives you some more guys in the building that you can kind of, that give you that floor. Is that there's the floor right now is so low in the secondary. If Nick Cross is not what they want him to be, and if they don't trust him back there, if Juju Brents gets hurt early in the season, or if Jalen Jones starts to look more like the guy late in the year, which is, you know, a guy who's better than a 7th round pick, but not like a 2nd round pick. And, or yeah, if you just have more injuries to Kenny Moore or Julian Blackman, like, they're at risk at this moment of that secondary being such a problem that it ultimately, in terms of how far their team's going to go, does not matter as much. Like, I think you could talk yourself into tons about their offensive just growth internally. But at a certain level, asking Anthony Richardson to outscore one of the league's worst secondaries is that's a little too much to put on a guy who started four games.
Yeah. I like, here's the thing. Like, even if you think like some of these big guys are not going to work out, like where's the Samson Ebakun signing this year? Where's the Matt Gay signing? Where are those guys? Those guys were not huge investments. They ended up being Ebakun ended up being more valuable than Gay this year because Gay had a little bit of a because Gay had the hip issue. But like those guys, Ebakun was a replacement. Ebakun was a replacement for Ngakoue. But so saying he took them to another level. But like where are even those additions? Like I'm okay with redundancy. I'm okay with going. We've got too many. We feel like we've got too many players here. Like if you can swing it, you know, because people are going to get hurt. This is the NFL, you know? So like, I don't know. It's puzzling. The thing I've said this before and you just said it, but like, to me, the most puzzling thing is they've had success in free agency before. Why the reluctance? Why not do it a little more?
The sense I get is just that they don't want to spend cash on outside free agents unless they are positive they're getting a full return on the investment. And so to them, Stephon Gilmore was that. If we sign him at this rate, he's almost certainly going to provide that level of value to us. And honestly, I think they take it to the point of like, if they signed a cornerback and yet Dallas Flowers or Jalen Jones broke out and it made that guy the backup, they're not getting return on the value out of a $6 million corner who's a backup. Whereas I think that's a great thing to have because you can never have too many and you need those kind of vets to help raise those young players. But that isn't the way that they're looking at it. This is both a Chris Ballard and a Jim Irsay thing. It's their patterns for so many years have been do not pay very many outside players. And so
yeah, that's an important point. And we're going to wrap up here pretty quick here, but like, I'm glad you brought up that point because it's one I've been trying to make for the last year or two, ever since talking to Irsay at the owners' meetings last year. This is not just a Chris Ballard thing. Mm-hmm. Jim Irsay does not believe in spending big money in free agency either. His specific example was we did it one time, referencing Trent Cole, Andre Johnson, Frank Gore, that class, and he said, and it didn't work out the way people thought it would. Like that's his example for it. Jim Irsay does not carry water for anybody, guys. Like he doesn't do that. He says what he thinks, and what he thinks is the way they operate. Like that's an important thing to remember.
And that free agency class was 2015, and 2 years later, he hired Chris Ballard with a plan in mind, which is we are a draft and develop franchise that re-signs our guys. And Chris, in that way, like Chris Ballard has fit that, you know, if that's what you're looking for, he's a great scout. Usually the problems of the Colts are not, they spent these draft picks poorly. It's more about like, do they make enough big trades for outside players and do they sign enough free agents from the outside? But like, that's, you know, it's on both of them because it is also Chris Ballard's philosophy. He's always operated as a scout, draft, develop. Yes. It's a little old school. And in fact, I'd say it's starting to get a little too old school, but it's on both of them. It's very much a shared partnership. And that's why that partnership has gone on now for, you know, what, 7-8 years at this point. And it doesn't seem like it's really, you know, on the edge of anything. Chris Ballard, I mean, you never know what's going to happen, but it seems like he's pretty secure in that role. He's doing the thing that his owner wants him to do, which is draft and develop and don't pay outside players.
Yep. Yep. So that's our summary for free agency. Maybe something changes. We're kind of at the point now where it doesn't feel like it can, even though there's guys out there. But we're going to start shifting into draft coverage a little bit more here coming up. The Colts do begin their offseason workouts next week. It's fun to think about. It's fun to talk to these guys and think about stuff that usually it's not super revealing stuff this time of year. But yeah,
that's kind of our summary of where the AFC South is, where the Colts are. Neither of us would have signed no one other than Raekwon Davis and Joe Flacco if we were pulling the strings. We're not, and no matter how much people think that what we say might influence things, they don't care, not one bit. If you need any confirmation of that, just go back and watch Jeff Saturday's introductory press conference, and see how much they care.
Do not wish that on people. I mean, they've got better things to do than that. Like,
but yeah, so that's where we're at on free agency as it stands right now. We would have both liked to have seen them do more. We are also a little skeptical, I think, both of us, on some of the moves the other AFC South teams made. But I think both of us probably respect the fact that they're trying to elevate themselves. Fair?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
For the Colts Cover 2 podcast, I'm Joel A. Erickson. This has been Nate Atkins. We will be back next week after talking to Shane Steichen. And I would guess we'll probably end up talking about the draft anyway.